This is Mental Selling. This is the sales podcast for people that are dedicated to making a difference in customers' lives and have a purpose beyond just a paycheck. I'm your host, Will Milano. Let's get right into the show.
Sometimes the journey into sales is a long road, and that road can be steep for some and require extra guidance and a degree of resilience, support, and self-belief. Sometimes someone comes along that changes the game and helps present new possibilities for others to follow and advocate for them. And that's who my guest is today. Chantel George is not only a highly successful sales executive, but she's also the founder and CEO of Sistas in Sales, the first and only global organization dedicated to providing networking, career advancement, and support specifically for women of color in sales. Chantel, thanks so much for joining me today. I know I first reached out to you about a year ago, so this is a bit of a lesson in resilience for me. So when you identify somebody you really want to speak with and meet with, to keep trying. So thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. And possibly a blessing in disguise because we've grown so much from last year to this year. So I'm excited to share that with you.
Absolutely. No, thank you so much. So let's start by talking about your own journey into sales and how that road went. And also, I'd like you to talk about any early assumptions or maybe misassumptions that you had about sales as a profession.
Thank you for your question. So I'm first generation American. I actually live, I know this is mostly audio, you can't see my background, but I'm actually sitting here in my childhood bedroom that I converted into an office. I live in my childhood home, and I very much community oriented. And when I grew up, that was some of the values that were taught to me. So I learned about sales somewhat by accident. And the reason why I bring up the community piece, and it'll make sense in a minute, but ultimately I learned about sales by accident. And I was just looking for something to hold me over while I figured out what I was going to do professionally. At the time, I thought business, law, even acting were really interesting paths. And then when I stumbled into sales while looking for a paycheck, I found a way to gamify it. And then I found the importance of having a community, because I didn't have community when I was in those early day sales offices calling 100 people a day. I realized it was clearly missing from my day to day. And I reflected on what were the values and the morals I grew up on, and how can I merge the two? As I continued progressing in my sales career, I realized that there needed to be a community for diverse salespeople because our journeys and our experiences were so different. It was both like me knowing that I wanted to be in sales after some time and just being okay with it. And then the second thing, there was a gap for community. And so I wanted to create that too.
It's interesting how you talked about accidentally getting into sales, because that seems to be such the typical path, right? That most people that get into sales as a career, it's not something that they set out to do during their educational years and things like that. That your comment about, I got into sales as something to do while I was figuring out what I was really going to do.
Yeah.
But then you grow to love it. So that's such a much more common thing, I think, than people realize.
I grew to love it once I realized that I had a support system. So I liked it when I did it. And then I loved it when I had community that wrapped around me. Because the answer is, to become very successful in sales, you need a lot of networking. You need a lot of support. Yeah. You need a lot of methodologies. You need to know a lot of different things. You need the ability to call on your network from college or call on your network from wherever. And so I didn't know any of this. I didn't understand how much was needed to thrive in this career. It's not like another job where you can maybe just put your head down. Like, you actually need to pull on every resource available to you to be successful. That's why community is important. That's why I realized there was a deficit. Yeah, I liked it, but I loved it when I realized how to get all my resources to work for me.
Yeah, because what you're saying, it's so much more beyond the how-to of selling. It's all those sort of intangibles. What I wanted to talk about next is, let's talk about some of the experiences you had along the way and how you figured out those intangibles, the attitudes that you were able to identify in yourself that helped you the most once you got into sales?
That's a good question. I feel like my peers that did not look like me, I felt that they had a sense of confidence about the job. I felt like they were very self-assured. I soon realized they were connected to the world of work in a way that I was not. When you're chasing a quota, you may have one day left before the month is over, right? Last day of the month. But if you're able to turn on that confidence, that feeling that I can do it, I'm going to put my head down, I'm going to approach this with a sense of stoicism and perseverance and drive. And the client on the other line will never know that this is like the deal that'll make or break my career. This is the deal that'll make or break my month. This is a deal that might put me on a PIP or whatnot. I felt that even people who weren't as skilled as me, because they had that level of groundedness due to their own networks, due to understanding corporate politics, due to their relationships with other managers, were able to turn that on during times of stress, and I couldn't. So it was also because of that that sounded off some alarms that this wasn't a need, this was imperative, because during the times of stress, the last day of the month, the last day of the quarter, the last day of the year, when you really need to turn on that bad boss energy, I had challenges finding that because I felt so out of place. I felt like an imposter. I felt very confused. I felt like my desperation was coming through the phone. The neediness of this deal closing was coming through the phone. It was now more about me. It wasn't about them. And I just didn't want to continue going down that way. And so I said to myself, I don't want any woman of color, any person of color to feel that this job that they're doing right now is going to make or break their entire livelihood. They must know that there are recruiters out there in the world that would want to hire them. There are companies other than this company that would be a great fit for them. There are methodologies they can learn to up-level their sales skills. This doesn't have to be so high pressure. And so I hope that answers your questions. Like during those times that I felt so unsupported that I had to do something about it.
Yeah. And we're going to talk in a few minutes about, again, the sort of origin and evolution of Sistas in Sales, which gets into a lot of the things that you're already talking about. But a question I had was, as your career progressed, what were some of the biggest, and you've already alluded to some of these, but the biggest challenges you faced? And were there any unwritten rules about being in sales that came to surprise you?
Yes. Territories matter. Don't let anybody tell you that otherwise. And the short list that sales managers give recruiters right before they're about to open a rep with people in their personal networks that already decided to hire. Those were a few things that I learned from working in these corporate spaces. I also learned the importance of having personal relationships with sales leaders. But to meet these folks, you have to have similar hobbies. So I learned golf was important, whiskey and different spirits, having understanding of different spirits were important. I learned a lot of different things. I learned that entering this world was foreign and required a lot of savviness.
And the thing about with recruiters, and we'll talk more about that subject of attracting and onboarding salespeople, but are you saying that when a lot of sales leaders engage with recruiters to find somebody that they've still already got their short list on the side that they're focused on?
I think that's a well-known fact. Yes. I think that is a flaw among many flaws in the industry, that folks are biased and because their networks are typically homogenous, referring their friends and referring their prior coworkers. So yes, absolutely.
So they don't end up expanding the pool of candidates the way that they think they are.
And this is not a shot at anyone, but I think that just comes naturally. If you're accustomed to spending time with people that look like yourself, then you're only going to really know those folks as professionals to be referring them. Absolutely.
I like to ask a question like this of a lot of guests that I have on. I think this would be really good for you, but I want to flip around and have you talk about your opinions on the customer's perspective and buyers today. And what do you think that they want today that they perhaps are not getting enough of from salespeople? And how can companies better train and prepare their salespeople to meet those customer expectations?
It's a broad question, but I think I will pull it down to the way that the buying journey has shifted. Recently, buyers are a lot more educated. They're spending more time understanding the subject matter. They're not necessarily looking or expect a salesperson to educate them from soup to nuts. They have done the research. There are a lot of sites that they can compare solutions to one another. And so now it is on the sales rep to be helpful, responsive, timely, solution-oriented, which I actually think is a win-win. For me, especially selling, I've only sold technology. Mm-hmm. So when I first started selling this in the early 2010s, I had to educate the market and hold their hand through. And sometimes just educating them was the most I could sell them. I couldn't even get to the actual selling. So now I think a lot of our buyers, especially our buyers that buy technology, they are a lot more informed. We can actually start solutioning earlier on, reducing the sales cycle versus taking them through a huge educational process. So I think it's great. Sometimes I feel like there's some mixed opinions about this, where sellers might feel like they are not able to be consulted and perhaps it feels more transactional. It's really not. I think we're just meeting each other at a more advanced stage in the cycle.
Yeah, that's probably a great way to put it, that you're meeting at a much more advanced stage in the cycle than ever before. I think that's absolutely right. You've talked a lot about the importance of asking tough questions and the ability to overcome objections, and this being one of your personal strengths. Can you share a bit about what works for you today and how you help others get better at those things?
I ask a lot of questions. I'm not afraid to be the person that asks questions. I'm not afraid to be curious. I also think a superpower of mine is I'm not asking questions without context. So before any meeting, I'm reading and understanding everything about the customer and everything about the persona. And my questions come laden with that research. So I think I win the opportunity to push back when it comes time to objection handle, because I've shown you that I have invested my time into understanding your problems. I am now just curious as to where I may have made a mistake in my assumptions and how we can figure out the best path forward. And again, I think if there was a time I went to a conservatory for acting, I thought that I wanted to be an actress. There's a lot of sellers that actually went through acting, had a BFA or went through that theater journey, as I found out. For me, one of the things that stuck out to me in my journey there was the importance of understanding your script inside and out. Once you understand your script inside and out, you understand your character inside and out, you understand the setting inside and out, literally can say it backwards and forwards, then you can actually play with it. And so it's similar to sales. If I understand my customer, if I read their earnings reports, if I understand what their CEO wants, if I understand what their CMO wants, all the C-suite, then I can just start playing with it. I'm like working from a bank of knowledge. And that's actually what I feel like it's the most interesting for everyone involved, because I'm not coming from an information deficit. We can really talk. I'm almost like in your business as an internal colleague trying to help you solve a problem.
Yeah, and they see you adding value right away.
Right.
And I think that it's that idea of if you're fully prepared and you've done all that research, right, then there's not that there's nothing to be nervous about, but it directly reflects in the degree of confidence you have, right? Because you've done that advanced work, you understand their business. And then the other thing I love that you said was about curiosity, because I think that's such a, you talk about that being one of your own strengths and superpowers, but curiosity and maintaining that with customers throughout the process is such an important thing, expressing it in a really genuine way.
Yeah, I have sold things that I wasn't curious about, and then I couldn't continue working in that organization, not because of anything the organization did poorly, but I knew that if I don't like the product, I don't like the personas, I don't like the problem it's solving, I'm just setting myself up for failure. There are too many companies in the world that I can work as a salesperson for or a sales leader for that I actually enjoy understanding. And I think that that's okay. In our first sales job, sometimes we sell things we're not fully passionate about. We can't necessarily keep doing that, you know, job 2, 3, 4, 5. I think at some point you should really only work at a company and sell a product that you actually think is interesting and you really care about the problem and you research that problem in your spare time and you're curious about the people. It'll just make your journey in sales a lot easier.
And something you just said, I wanted to pull on a bit, that the degree of belief that you have in the product and, or service that you're representing, how important is that?
Extremely important. I think you are the face of the company when you are talking to a prospect about the product. And I imagine that as a CEO of Sisters in Sales, if I came on the phone and I didn't seem that enthused, no one would be excited to partner with me. So I think that any person who's responsible for bringing revenue into a company needs to behave as enthusiastic as the CEO would behave if they were the ones on the phone, because that energy transfers. People are looking at what you're saying. They're looking at what you look like, how you sound, the inflections in your voice, the amount of times you smile. In my early days of selling, when I didn't have Zoom and we were just cold calling on the phone, I had a mirror in front of me that I would look and see if I was smiling while I was talking, because that would convey enthusiasm over the phone. And if I wasn't smiling while I was talking, my energy transfer would be off and people would be less likely to stay on the phone. They'd be more interested in hanging up. So it definitely matters.
And buyers can sniff that out, right? Whether you really have that innate sort of belief and passion for what you're talking about or not. Because it's pretty hard to fake, isn't it?
Definitely. That's why you pick something that you like and solve a problem that you're interested in.
Yeah. So I want to now talk a bit about the origins of Sisters in Sales, which was it 2017? Is that correct?
So 2017 is when I had the idea. 2018 is when I became incorporated.
Okay. I'd love you to talk about the path of more about your motivation and goals surrounding starting the organization, and just actually how did it evolve in the early days, and what's most surprised you about how it's grown?
I fully thought that I was going to be working as a sales rep and putting on maybe a small dinner here or there whenever the idea told me. I had no idea that I was going to grow a business and scale it to a seven-figure business in 5 years. And then from there, it become my full-time job. So I think I knew that my challenges were popular to some. I had no idea it was going to be a nail in the head for over 8,000 women globally. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get there alone. Obviously, I have an amazing team that have been with me every step of the way. People believe in the mission. There are even folks on my team that are not sales professionals, because we need a combination of different specialties, but they believe in the mission so much as well. Once they see what and how we're transforming lives, it all starts to click. But I would say that it's been an amazing journey to watch a dinner that was supposed to be 10 women blossom into all of these corporate partnerships and this large-scale conference and these one-off events, and also the global expansion that we've done. Last year, we took a major bet on West Africa, and we launched a program in Ghana. This year, we did another bet on London and launched a program in London with London Tech Week. So it's a global phenomenon in a way for me, but maybe it's not a phenomenon per se, because this might have been on everyone's hearts and they just didn't have a place to convene and to meet other women who are going through this.
And it's over 8,000 members now globally, is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
What sticks out to you? I'm sure you hear a lot of feedback and appreciation from your members, but what's a couple of things that stand out that people come to you to say, I've gotten so much from this organization and it's helped me do X, or it's helped me get to, what stands out to you?
The biggest thing is, I think that the women in our organization know they have the talent, but they haven't had the validation. And being able to put senior women who have been in sales for 20 to 30 years up on a panel or write an article about them brings this whole thing full circle to our members. Like, this is something I could be. When I was working in sales in my first job, there was no executive sales leader that looked like me.
Yeah.
It simply felt like I was just waiting for my time for it to be over. I had no person I could look to who could be a symbol of resilience and executive, like an executive that I can look and emulate. So that alone has opened up and cleared up so many questions. Me interviewing, just like you're interviewing me, a sales leader who has been in the game for so long, and getting the real answers and what it's like for you. It's incredible. The second thing I think is opportunities. Because opportunities aren't shared to underrepresented groups in the same way, there are so many opportunities we bring to the forefront of our members. Everything from academies that companies are putting on. So for example, SAP is one of our partners, and they're going to be sharing about their cloud academy and how to be upskilled in cloud. Microsoft is one of our partners. They upskilled over 100 of our members over the course of 3 to 4 months, take the Azure 900 exam so that they could sell Azure products or understand cloud. And plugging and playing those opportunities has been a game changer too. I've spoken before about being raised in the language of business. And let's say you come from a different place and perhaps most of sales are white men. So let's say you're a white guy and your dad worked at IBM and your grandfather worked at IBM. Growing up in a business household, it may seem like opportunities are always plentiful because they are, and you may not even understand the advantage that you have or the privilege that you have, and that's okay. And so we're just trying to emulate that. We're trying to facsimilate that so that our community can make up for the fact that we don't have all of this generational connection to the world of business. And we can get that when you come to our Slack, can get that when you come to our events. You don't have to feel starved for opportunity.
Yeah, you can shorten that gap, right?
Right.
With all those resources that you provide. A simple question with a very probably complex answer, but why do you think sales and sales manager roles are still predominantly held by white males?
We talked about this a little bit earlier. The referral network is one major issue. I would say mentorship within the organization. Someone who, like, I feel like white men can meet each other and have a common discourse at the same level. For Black women or women of color, there is a hesitance to reach out to a senior leader who might be a white man and ask for mentorship. We need to know that's okay. Whereas perhaps white men in corporate spaces have shared familial ties or went to the same fraternity or same alma mater, what have you, and that connection is not as scary or that relationship might not be as difficult to curate. I have, in my first sales jobs, I've gone up to white men in leadership and I've asked to be mentored and I was pretty much told no. So like, I think that it's a scary place to be an other in an environment. So you don't get that level of mentorship. And without that level of mentorship, you can't navigate the corporate space well enough to stay in your job.
Because it's one thing to join an organization, but if you don't have that support and start to see others around you that you can relate to, you're probably not going to stay. And that contributes to the retention problem that sales organizations have, and specifically with women of color, right?
Yeah, you need it. It's not really negotiable. If you don't have the lay of the land, if you don't know how to navigate, you just simply can't stick around in a senior setting. You can be a junior or an early mid, but you can't transition to senior. And if you never get a chance to transition to senior, then you just get plucked out of the workforce and you just leave sales altogether and you find another job in another department. Like, to become an executive, I think we can all say, and I'm sure your listeners are familiar, you need unspoken, and you need to navigate corporate politics. That's just clear. That is what it is.
What advice do you specifically give women of color who are either just getting into sales, you know, maybe they've been in it for a year or something like that, or just even considering getting into sales, period? What's advice that you give them for getting off the ground quickly? What do you think stops them, and any sort of specific challenges or pressures that they might feel?
I think that underrepresented groups, women of color, are interested in sales. That is 1,000%. I purposefully did not actually build the community at the junior level because I knew that the job itself would attract certain types of people. And I knew that after a year or so of doing the job, they would come to their own decisions about it, not necessarily about their feelings as an underrepresented group, but more so, do they like the job? Could they call 100 people a day? Could they email 100 people a day? Could they negotiate? After some time has passed, that's when I wanted to come in and swoop in and help that individual grow. So I don't think there's a deficit or a lack of people interested in working in sales. I think especially now, there's so many people interested in working in sales. Once you've decided if you like working in sales, then I come in to support you figuring out how to stay in sales. So that's where my role is. But I would say my advice is take everything out of it for a second. I know I just spoke a lot about corporate politics. I know I just spoke a lot about navigating. Just figure out if you like it. Does this bring you joy? Do you enjoy negotiating? Do you like creating client presentations and problem solving? Focus on that, because once you figure it out, the beauty of working in sales, after you get a handle on the corporate politics and the lay of the land, is the meritocracy of it. The more you do, the more you make. And if these are the things that motivate you, then that's perfect. And there's a place for you with us and many other communities as well. If you're not motivated by that, then don't try to force it, because there are different types of roles that are in the sales universe you might like. Customer success, sales engineering, solution engineering. There's so many. There's so many. And I always say, start from a place of and analyzing if you even like what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's not for everyone.
No, it's not. Is there anything around the corporate politics piece that you would elaborate on that you think people really need to know that you learned along the way? You know, it is a very obvious thing that corporate politics exists and you've got to be able to navigate it. But are there any sort of specific examples that you learned about and were able to master dealing with?
I don't know if I would say I've mastered dealing with it. I think in my last sales roles, when I sensed that there was that, I prefer to not deal with it and build something that I think would help more women. And that was my passion. But I don't know if I have an answer for that. These systems have been around since before you and I were born. So I think that there's power in numbers, finding your community. Just to compare it to some of the other community charged change makers, like there's a SAG-AFTRA strike going on right now. So writers and artists have found their community and they're trying to make change. You could ask them the same question. Have they navigated corporate politics? Clearly not, because they have to get together to force it. So there's no right answer that I can provide to say, this is how you navigate this, because it's so much bigger than all of us. But what we can do is get together and work with socially conscious companies that have woken up and are intentional about figuring it out. So I would like to say that I put it on us to find the best companies that already have done that work than trying to change the beast in totality, because it's just too big.
Yeah, no, that's understandable. Absolutely. And you talk about the intentionality that a lot of companies have, and I'm sure you talk a lot with leaders within organizations. And I think there are a lot of companies that have all the best of intentions when it comes to diversifying their sales force, but maybe they don't know where to start. And that's, I think, part of the value that you bring to these companies. So what do you say to sales organizations and to leaders that they can be doing to attract and mentor and retain more women of color? Where do you tell them to start, focus on, et cetera?
Of course, like I would say, join our community, become a partner of our organization. However, that aside, once someone is in your organization that is an underrepresented person of color, you should go to them. 9 times out of 10, they're not going to go to you. And ensure that they feel that there is a connection between you as a senior leader and them as a newbie to your organization. That could be a game changer. So just don't wait to reach out and start a dialogue. I can tell you that I have had a handful of that happen in my career, and it's made a world of a difference.
What's the best advice that you've received in your sales career? That might be a broad question, but I think it's a good one I really wanted to ask you.
I think the best advice was always identify the next action. I'm the kind of person that wants to create a mega plan and give things a ton of thought before I do anything. And some of the best advice was, you may have a plan and that's great, but the most immediate next action is what matters right now. Is it a meeting? Is it a proposal? Don't leave a meeting without a next step. that will bring you closer to the yes.
And from a sales leadership and sales coaching standpoint, do you have any lessons learned from being a sales leader and mentoring, whether it's formally or informally mentoring others, along the lines of what would you tell companies that they should be doing to better prepare future sales leaders and having a more diverse sales leadership team?
That's a big question, and I'm trying to think of how to answer it. It's hard. I think that the conversations in terms of diversity and inclusion is dying because of some of the other major news lines, storylines. It would be great to see a company not pull back from their diversity commitments. I think that a lot of employees that work at these companies that are underrepresented are a little concerned that there was a lot of talk about these pledges and making different changes. And now when here, 2 years later, that those pledges and those changes have started to become less important. Just like a customer, if you were providing white glove support this whole time during the buying process, you got the yes, and then all of a sudden your customer success team is not helping or your account manager has disappeared. People start to feel slighted by that. So I'm not necessarily saying people need to enact programs and do all of this extra stuff, but just stand by your word. Because when George Floyd was murdered, a lot of different companies said they were going to do a lot of different things. And the trust is eroding internally with the employees and the executives of the company because the tune has changed.
And lastly, just from a sales leader attributes standpoint, because a lot of companies make the mistake, right, of they end up promoting their quote unquote highest performer into a sales leadership role, thinking that person should just naturally be the sales manager. What do you think are the specific attributes that make a really strong sales leader, both from the context of somebody that might aspire themselves to be in a leadership role further down their career, as well as just what companies should be looking for when they're looking across a pool of people to potentially promote? What is it that sort of stands out about a great sales leader?
Empathy and the ability to provide feedback. Providing feedback that's actionable, thoughtful, is like an underestimated skill set. It is not like a lot of people, I think that leadership in any capacity is just providing like off the cuff feedback. Here's what I think. But I've had some amazing experiences with sales leaders have taken a step back, thought about the feedback, put it all together, really showed me that they cared about me understanding the information. And I think that's what sets people apart from leaders that are entitled versus leaders that are in action.
Yeah. No, that's really good. I bet the empathy and feedback, it's missing, right, from so many sales leaders. And they're not really taught how to do that themselves. They're not prepared once they're elevated into those roles.
Yeah, that's true as well. You're right. You are correct. Culture of sales has changed a lot. And I think that we have a lot of sales enablement tools that replace that types of feedback. And I think that we step away from the thoughtfulness of becoming a sales leader. Maybe we can go back and change that again. Because if I didn't have a sales manager pull me off the floor once and take me to a conference room and replay my call back and gave me an hour of their time going through each of the things that I've said, I would never be able to develop the awareness necessary to be the salesperson I am today. It requires that much intentionality and dedication and not reliant on the tools and not reliant on the AI to do it all for us. Because the intangible of that interaction is someone believes in me. They think I can do it.
Right. It's that humanity, right? That humanity that's required that AI and sales enablement tools just can't provide.
Yeah.
And I think part of it's also just the commitment and mindset of the sales leader themselves to embrace that as that's their role, right? That they don't resist that portion of it.
Or that they know that it means a lot. I may not have the communication skills at that time as a scared rep afraid of losing their job to be like, thank you so much for changing my life. But you need to have conviction that pulling someone from making more mistakes, telling them how to change things, even if they can't say it and boost your ego in that moment, that you have helped them tremendously by showing that you care.
And showing that you care Because I think that's a great point of emphasis and a great way to end the discussion that we've had. Chantel, I'm so thrilled that you were able to join me on the show today. I want to thank you again very much for taking time out of your schedule.
Of course. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Anything that any comments you want to make about your annual conference in the fall and what the focus of that's going to be and anything that you might be talking about there?
Sure. Our annual conference is coming up September 21st to the 23rd. However, for the week of the 18th, it's a week full of events. And we have events that our sponsors are pulling together for members of our community, dinners and brunches and lunches. We also have our first ever inaugural Aspiring Seller Summit. So we are responding to junior talent looking for community 6 years later. And then we're doing that main conference, the 21st to the 23rd, with an honoree gala. We're honoring Bonita Stewart, Vice President of Global Partnerships at Google, first Black VP, and a few other amazing luminaries. And the 2 days of content, the 22nd and the 23rd of September, are going to be a compilation of different trending verticals, like generative AI and cloud, in addition to understanding how to map out your financial future with your commissions and bonuses, wellness, becoming a sales creator, why that's important. So those are some of the things we'll be discussing.
That's great. Good luck with the conference this year. I know it'll be great for you. For our listeners, you can find and follow Chantel George on LinkedIn, as well as on Twitter at Chantel Creates. And her organization, Sisters in Sales, can be found at sistersinsales.com, as well as on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. And thank you for everyone listening to us today from wherever and whenever you might be listening. For more content like this, you can visit us at integritysolutions.com. Also, please be sure to subscribe to the show. Leave us a comment or rating. We really enjoy and appreciate getting feedback as we continue to develop the show. Scroll back and check out any previous episodes you might have missed. And until next time, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for listening, and I really hope you've enjoyed this episode of Mental Selling. Please make sure that you're subscribed, and as always, leave us a comment or a rating. Share it with your networks. You'll get more content like this on our website at integritysolutions.com. Until next time, I'm Will Milano with Integrity Solutions. Thanks very much again for being with us.